Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Anthony Brooks, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Anna Trebko, at 34 years old, is already an opera sensation. Music critics call her a soprano who has it all, a magnificent voice, an electrifying stage presence, youth and beauty. She also has a Cinderella story. She grew up in the south of Russia, left home at 16, and quickly went from cleaning the Mariinsky Theater in St. Petersburg to performing there and around the world to enormous praise. She has a contract with the Metropolitan Opera House in New York, an exclusive recording deal with Deutsche Grammophon, and yet she hardly fits the mold of a traditional opera diva. She listens to pop music, likes to go out late, and released her own MTV-style opera music video. This hour on Point, Anna Trebko and a new voice and face of opera. You can join the conversation. Has opera become an art form for the senior set? If so, what can opera houses do to attract a younger crowd? Does Anna Trebko sound like the answer to you? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And joining me now from New York is Anna Trebko. She's currently performing the role of Norina in Donizetti's Don Pasquale at the Metropolitan Opera in New York. Her CDs include Violetta and Sempre Libera. And Anna Trebko, thanks for joining us.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Привет, which means hello in Russian.
Привет to you. Or should we say buongiorno?
Oh, buongiorno.
to sound operatic here. It's a pleasure to have you, and your singing is beautiful. It really
Thank
is.
Thank you.
It really is something, and what a pleasure to have you. I'm interested in your story. I'd love to hear, we've made a couple of references to this Cinderella story and how you grew up in the Soviet Union and how you got your start in opera. Tell us about your life growing up there.
My life was actually pretty good and interesting. When I was a kid, I had lots of friends, and we had lots of parties, and I read lots of books and did many things, the sport, the ballet, the music, the singing, dancing. I was very busy, and I always want to learn something, but I always knew what I have to perform.
You always knew that you were destined to perform on the stage?
I don't know if I was a destined, but I wanted that desperately, and I need the audience. I need the audience to see me and to listen to me.
So tell me how you got started. I mean, how did you actually start singing, and how you ended up, cleaning in the lobby at the Mariinsky Theater? I'm interested to hear that story out of your own mouth.
And that story, I hate it so. How did I start it? I started, I think, when I was five. I started already perform on the stage. I was in a young ensemble of the kids. It was like 50 of us, and there was a chorus and orchestra and dancing group, and we was singing and traveling around the country. And I was in this ensemble for 10 years, so I had a quite experience about singing on the stage. But that was not an opera singing, and by that time I hated opera. I found this kind of boring.
Really?
Of course, as a kid, we didn't have even the opera theater there. And what I knew about opera is sometimes the show on TV some very boring production with the boring fat people singing, and I turned off the... that I didn't like it. How did I start to like opera? I went to see the live performance once, twice, three times, and I was absolutely fascinating about that because I love the voices, the real voices, and the sound of the orchestra and how they sound together, and it really was beautiful. And I came back again and again, and I decided that's what I really wanted to do.
So you got over your concern about the boring fat people singing. You put that behind you.
The music, this is the most beautiful thing about the opera, really. Always, once and forever. And I love the music, so.
Now, you left home at 16 and you ended up at the Mariinsky Theater, correct?
Yes, I went at 16 to study in St. Petersburg because I loved that city. Even if it's very cold, it's really cold there. But I love the architecture and I love the special spirit there. And it's a really high cultured city. And I wanted to be the part of it. So I went and I studied for 7 years in the conservatorium, yeah. And it was interesting time, very difficult time because it was early 90s. Mm-hmm. And it was the very hard time in Russia. There was really nothing to eat. There was no money. There was lots of crime. And so outside was not really nice. So I spent all my time inside the theater and watching the performances and rehearsals and study. So that and like
you were
that,
working there, right? I mean, you were helping clean the theater. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was working there for 2 years just because I wanted to enter to the theater without any problem. So then I could see really everything what I wanted. And it really helps me because I was very like a theater kid. I grew up there and I like the smell of the dust, you know, backstage. And I went to the costume shops and I saw the costumes and the sets and everything. It's really fantastic.
And how did you go from that role to getting your debut as an opera singer? I mean, what led to what led you on the path from working at the Mariinsky Theater to actually performing there? How did you get there?
Well, I've been studying very hard, and once I won the competition, I took the first prize, and my teacher say, okay, now maybe the time when you can go and sing some small roles at the big Mariinsky Theater, like a Barbarina, Le Nozze di Figaro, something small to start with. And okay, I went, I sang audition, they like me, and they say, you have to be back to sing for Gergiev. And I was back, and I sang, and he likes me. And he say, okay, let's her try to sing small roles. And I was sitting on the rehearsal of new production, Le Nozze di Figaro, as a Barbarina. And suddenly, director asked me to do the whole first act of Susanna. And I repeat this without any mistake. And since that, I became to be Susanna.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, does that remain one of your favorite roles in opera?
I adore this role, and I'm very happy to be back to this role right now in Salzburg, because this role has really everything. It's the longest one. It's very long. But I like this woman, this character. She's very smart, intelligent, and everything just goes around her. And plus the music of Mozart, it's always fantastic.
We're talking to Anna Notrebko. She's a soprano who at the age of 34 has starred with opera companies and symphony orchestras around the world. The press has called her a demigod, an artist who has it all and has thrown the stuffy world of opera on its head. You can join the conversation by calling 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Are you an opera fan? Are you not an opera fan and looking for a reason to become interested in opera? Tell me, Anna Notrebko, how your background helps inform the roles you play today on stage, the way you were brought up. I mean, do you bring that to the stage?
Well, I don't know. I'm not really thinking about that, to bring something from myself to my characters. I think it happens anyway, somehow. But when I'm studying the role, I'm just looking at the score and I'm listening to the music and I'm trying to find something very special what I can do for this role. Something different, what nobody else done before. And usually it happens, and I'm very happy about that.
You know, I was reading about you before this interview, and I came across, or maybe it was a video clip of an interview with you, and I read a quote where you said, when you go on stage to sing, you have to be absolutely cold. What do you mean by that? Because when one hears you sing, it's anything but cold. It's full of warmth.
Maybe I didn't say this in the right way. You don't have to be cold. You have to be hot, but you have to be able to control your emotions sometimes, because emotions can really kill you there, because the music is so passion, and when you in the role, which is actually good for the drama actors, this is helps them to be really, you know, to passion and to break the voice. We cannot break our voice with the passion, you know, because we has to sing.
Anna, I want to ask you to hold on. We're going to take a short break, and we'll come back. We're going to continue that point. We're talking this hour with the young star Anna Netrebko, who critics say has turned the stuffy world of opera on its head. You can join the conversation. What do you hear in Anna's story? Have you seen her perform? What did you think? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Be back after a short break. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour with the young opera star Anna Netrebko, whose music critics have said has it all. You can join the conversation. Could Anna Netrebko convince you to give Puccini and Verdi a try? Are young stars enough to keep opera houses full? Is it time for more opera stars to make MTV-style music videos? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And with me from New York is Anna Netrebko. She's currently performing the role of Norina in Donizetti's Don Pasquale at the Met in New York. And Anna Netrebko, let me ask you about these opera music videos, which I actually saw last night. And they were really interesting. You worked with the same choreographer and director, Vincent Patterson, who has collaborated with people like Madonna and Michael Jackson, among other pop icons. What was that like for you?
It was a great experience. I actually like this. Many people criticizing that, but I think it was beautiful. It was different. I mean, it was not so serious. It was a fantasy, and it was done in a beautiful way, and it was fun. We shoot this in like 1 week. And
it was fun. It was fanciful. And we should just explain, since it's radio and we can't sort of show the video to our listeners, but it's a set, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but it's a very sort of hip-looking, kind of a popular music-style video, but you're lip-syncing to opera arias, very beautiful arias, but in a very contemporary setting, riding in limousines and on stages and with handsome men and, you know, doing different things. And I gather that the traditional folks from the opera world probably weren't very impressed with that.
No, they didn't like it.
What did you hear from them?
Oh, they say it's bad and bad taste, and why I'm lip-syncing and what is this? Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
But why did you want to do it? I mean, was this part of an effort to reach out to younger viewers and maybe convince younger people to give opera a try?
No, there was one producer from Salzburg who saw me in Don Giovanni in very modern production, and he thought about this, making this video, and he came to me with this crazy idea, and I loved it that, and I say, I want to try it, and I learned a new profession for me, to be a movie actress. That was a bit different from singing.
I guess, though, one has to ask. I mean, I've read that you like popular music. You're doing popular music style opera videos. Do you have any interest singing pop music one day?
No.
Absolutely not.
No. Hmm. It's not that interesting for me.
Really?
Sorry. I mean, I can listen to that, but work on it, no.
Yeah. Well, I mean, say more about that. I mean, you're obviously so decisive about it. It's just not interesting to you.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. We should play some music. We want to hear you sing. So I was going to ask you to introduce a piece of music that we have ready to go here. This is as Donna Anna in Mozart's Don Giovanni singing Crudele non mi dir bel idil mio. Which translates, cruel, I know my love, I am too unhappy. Do you want to talk about this aria before we play it a little bit?
Oh, well, you know the story of Don Giovanni, yeah?
Yes. But why don't you run through it very quickly for our listeners who might not?
Well, she's definitely in love with Don Giovanni, but she cannot say this to anybody. And also to the man who is close to her and who wanted to be her husband. And she always postponed this, and she say, maybe later. But now finally she's opened her heart to him and say, I don't love you. I'm not happy and I don't love you.
Okay.
That's it.
Well, here it is. This is Anna Netrebko as Donna Anna from Mozart's Don Giovanni. That's Anna Netrebko as Donna Anna in Mozart's Don Giovanni. And Anna Netrebko, so beautiful. Tell me what you feel when you hear yourself singing like that. It's just such a gorgeous sound, and I'm just curious to know how it affects you.
I don't know, weird.
Weird.
Well, I recorded this, I think, almost 4 years ago, long time ago. And sometimes I'm thinking, oh, now I could do it better.
Really? So do you hear ways that you might want to do it differently?
Yes, of course.
I'm sure you're a hard critic on yourself. And speaking of critics, we're going to bring someone else into this conversation. Joining me from New York is Justin Davidson. He's the winner of the 2002 Pulitzer Prize for Criticism. He's a classical music critic for Newsday. And Justin Davidson, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Anthony.
How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Sure. I wanted to get you involved in this conversation about Anna Netrebko. And one of the themes we're interested in exploring is that, you know, opera houses have been struggling for some time. The Metropolitan Opera House has a new general manager, Peter Gelb, who starts this summer. What are some of the problems opera houses face today?
Well, the Met specifically faces a problem of filling its 3,800 seats every night. They do 7 performances a week, 25 operas throughout the year, and that's a very tall order.
Yeah. So is the issue, I mean, and obviously what I'm getting to, the issue is probably trying to attract a new generation of opera goers. Is someone like Anna Netrebko the ticket to do that?
Not on her own, but it's certainly a step in the right direction. I mean, the important thing about a house like the Met is you got to fill it with stars. You've got to keep as many very high-profile singers on the stage as many nights of the week as you can. So Peter Gelb has committed Anna Netrebko to being in 2 productions a year, which is great, but that's 2 out of 25. Hmm. So the real issue is, can he cultivate more stars? Can you develop a a roster of people who and casts who can really sing all that repertoire and keep people interested and keep opera in front of the public. Mm.
And tell me what you hear in Anna Netrebko. I mean, I don't mean to put you on the spot. She's with us. But I mean, what does she bring to the world of opera that maybe wasn't there before?
Well, she's a huge talent, and certainly she's one of a group of singers who really are, you know, not only have all the musical goods and this rich, very exciting voice, just, you know, you hear her tone quality that just, you know, sends shivers up your spine, but she's also a really tremendous presence on stage, and that's the kind of star quality you're talking about. That's the kind of thing that delivers in a huge house like the Met, as well as in smaller ones. You know, the real difference between opera in the United States and opera in Europe is, at least in part, the size of the house. You know, American opera houses, the major ones, are very big, and that means that you need to have people who really can impose their presence on that stage. You asked me before about young audiences. The real problem when you have houses that size, especially at the Met, is that young audiences can't generally afford the good tickets. And if you're going to go to the opera for that kind of visceral, thrilling experience that a star like Anna Netrebko can give you, then you really want to be close enough to have that experience instead of up in the nosebleed seats, you know, where it feels like you're watching it on TV.
Interesting.
So, you know, there's a real barrier to how much even a great singer like her can do to bring in new audiences when the ticket prices for those seats is so high. We're talking about, you know, $100, $150, up to $250 a ticket.
Mm. Anna Netrebko, would you like to see more younger folks coming to see you sing? I mean, is that sort of one of the things you think about when you're performing?
I'm very happy when I see the young people in the audience and when they, after the performance, coming to say hi and congratulate me. I'm really happy. Mm. And I really want them to love opera, because it's deserved that.
But, you know, you said earlier when you were younger you used to think of opera as boring. I know you don't think that now, but I've read as well when I was preparing for this interview, you did sort of say, I'd like to see opera change, because you said it can be boring. And I want to ask you what you meant by that. How could it change and reach out to a broader audience?
It's changed a lot, and it's so many wonderful, exciting singers right now, and great productions, and really, really interesting. So it's already changed.
Well, let's get some callers into this conversation. 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK, to join the conversation with Anna Netrebko and Justin Davidson, who's joining us from New York. Phyllis is calling from Westboro, Massachusetts. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi there.
How are you? What's on your mind?
Well, I want to tell just a short story and then actually add something based on what your critic just said. I heard Anna Netrebko do Don Pasquale on April 3rd. I had gone to New York with a friend of mine, and I absolutely adored the performance, and she was just amazing. I was just bowled over. I hadn't seen her before. I go down to the Met about two or three times a year from Boston, and I was so bowled over that I normally go with my daughter, who's a 20-something and has enjoyed opera since she was about 14. I started taking her to New York. I came home, I went on eBay, and I found two tickets for the sold-out performance last Saturday and literally drove my daughter down and back in one day so she could see Anna in Don Pasquale.
Wow. And how old is your daughter, Phyllis?
My daughter is 28.
Mm-hmm. And is she an opera fan like her mother?
Well, actually, we've sort of developed it together. It was accidental because I'm very into classical music and she wasn't, but I discovered she enjoyed opera when I took her to the first performance she ever saw was The Magic Flute. And once I discovered that, we just started going down to the Met because I figured if she loves it, she's going to see the best. And we go down probably twice a year. Once we went down three times. And I had actually taken her in the fall to see La Cenerentola. Mm-hmm. But when I saw Don Pasquale, I went, oh, my God. And Anna really was incredible. Her acting was just fabulous. And it wasn't just the voice, which was beautiful, but the way she acts and the presence on stage was amazing.
Well,
I mean, so amazing that I went back and saw it a second time.
You know, Phyllis, you could do the rest of our listeners a favor here. Describe what Anna looks like.
Oh, my God, she's beautiful. she's slim. long, in, at least in this production. I'm not sure if it's natural, but she has long, dark black hair. And the first time I went down on the third, I had much better seats. I was sitting in the orchestra, and this time I was up on the last row in the grand tier with my daughter. It wasn't quite as good. But when I was there on the third, and I really could see clearly the stage, she looks like a movie actress. Mm. I mean, it's not your normal. And the funny thing is, I had gone to see Flores. I really wanted to see Flores again. I love him. And the first time I saw him, the soprano was like half again as big as he is. So it took a little bit away from the production. But she and Flores in this production are just so perfectly matched. And because he's not a big man for a tenor, he's a very slim young man also, and they were just so perfect.
Phyllis, I want to thank you for your call. It's just wonderful description. It's wonderful to hear your enthusiasm about this. Thanks for calling in.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. Anna Netrebko, what do you make of when you hear people like Phyllis gushing at you? I guess the question that I'm trying to get to is I'm just wondering how this huge publicity has affected your career. You're only 34 years old. How are you handling it? I mean, how is it working for you?
Right now, 5 minutes ago, I was blushing. But it was very nice. Thank you for all the wonderful words about me. Thank you very much.
And Justin Davidson, you're still with us, aren't you?
Yes, I
want to ask you, and again, I don't want to point this conversation in too superficial a direction, but Phyllis does raise a point, and it's hard to ignore this when you're talking about Anna Netrebko. She is slim. She is beautiful. She does sort of stand in contrast to the sort of cliche opera diva, you know, big, florid, busty women and gentlemen. How important is that in terms of to the image of opera, that there are these kinds of stars coming aboard now?
Well, it's important, but it's important because she can sing.
Yeah.
In the end, what really matters is what she can deliver in the opera house, and she's shown she can do that. But at the same time, opera can be very attractive to a younger generation because it's really a multimedia art form, always has been. It's a total spectacular theatrical musical experience. So acting ability, believability on stage, agility, physical agility and attractiveness, of course, all these things are important in the same way they are in the movies.
Mm. And what of her, Justin Davis, you heard me talking earlier about these opera music videos. Some of them, I guess, weren't very well received by the critics. What was your take on this effort?
Well, they're not geared to the critics. It doesn't really matter. It's more of a marketing tool than it is a musical product, and I have no problem with that.
Mm.
Whatever works. I think opera companies and the music business and individual singers and their managers are all trying to find ways to keep opera plugged into contemporary culture, and I think that's entirely appropriate. Whether traditional opera mavens like those music videos or not really doesn't seem terribly relevant to me. If they can find their own audience, if they can bring some people into the opera house, that's fine, especially so long as once those people are in the opera house, the opera house can deliver.
Mm-hmm.
and the singers can deliver, and that's I can't stress that enough. That's so crucial.
Justin Davidson, stand by and stay with us. We're going to come back, and Anna Netrebko, of course, stay with us. We're going to come back to you. We're talking this hour with the young opera star Anna Netrebko about her very quick rise in the opera world and about some of the challenges opera houses face today. We're also talking to Justin Davidson, a critic for Newsday. You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. We'll be back after a short break.
Thank you. Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. The William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. The Pew Charitable Trust, serving the public interest through information, policy solutions, and support for civic life, online at pewtrusts.org. And Anne and John Herman, celebrating the Breakthrough Collaborative, involving middle school students in learning and...
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour with one of opera's newest stars, Anna Netrebko, about her rise and the future of the opera. We're also joined by Justin Davidson, a critic for Newsday. You can join the conversation. Has opera become an art form for the senior set? If so, what can opera houses do to attract a younger crowd? Does Anna Netrebko sound like the answer to you? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And Anna Netrebko, I want to start this segment off before we go to our callers, because we've got a bunch of people out there across America that want to talk to you. But, you know, I've read that you love being on stage. You talked about it almost as an addiction, the way you draw energy from the audience. I'd love to get you to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, this is absolutely true. Once you been on the stage, once you try it, you will never forget it, because it's really like a drug. I never tried the drugs, but I guess it's something like that. You became to be addicted to that.
When did you realize that? I mean, when did you get that first feeling?
From the first time I went to the stage.
When you were a very little girl?
When I was a little girl, and after that it's became to be stronger, and sometimes it's really fantastic. I mean, it's yeah.
Well, let's take a couple of calls. Jefferson is calling from Las Vegas, Nevada. Hi, Jefferson.
Hey, how are you?
Very well. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Obviously, Anna's a very beautiful woman, and you would think that that would drive people to the opera. But I was an opera major in college, and I think what I realized the most out of my experience was that the younger people have a hard time connecting to opera because of the language. In the United States, so few of us are multilingual. And it's difficult. It doesn't matter how sexy opera can be, how exciting it can be. If you don't hear the dialogue as it's being delivered and understand it, it's hard to connect to it, really. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I know there are some purists who say, no, it needs to be done in the language it's written in. But I think that there are some instances where opera houses could build an audience by doing that.
By doing English language or translated operas, essentially.
Right, Anna
let me ask Anna Netrebko and also Justin Davidson. Let me start with you, Anna. What do you think of that? What do you think of Jefferson's suggestion?
I think what operates not an easy art, and you have to be prepared for that. You have to know some history. You have to know what opera can be in the different languages. You have to read libretto. You have to know the story of the opera before to go there. And plus, there is a subtitle, so you can really understand what it's thinking about. Mm.
Justin Davidson, is there any move at all to respond to Jefferson's suggestion?
Well, there are a few companies that do opera in translation. The big problem with that is that once you're going to do it in translation, it has to be totally clear so that everybody can, in fact, understand it. And that's something that's very difficult to accomplish. I don't see the point of doing something in English that then you need super titles or subtitles for anyway, because even though it's in English, you can't really follow it. But what has made an enormous difference is the introduction of super titles, and at the Metropolitan Opera they have seat back titles, which means you're reading the translation on a small screen that's attached to the back of the seat in front of you. And that works very well, and it's made a huge difference in terms of bringing people who would otherwise have been intimidated by difficult plots in foreign languages. Mm.
Let's go to George, who's calling from Greece. Hi, George.
Hello there.
Hello there. Thanks for joining us.
I'm calling you from a small fishing village in the Peloponnesus.
Lucky you.
And it's Netrebko. I have met, to my greatest good fortune, accidentally, on German television, received on a satellite here in Greece. And I have never seen her before, never heard her name before, but I was so absolutely captivated that fortunately I had enough presence of mind to record the program, and then I started showing it to my friends in different countries in Europe and also in the United States. and she had absolutely charmed everybody.
Now, where was she singing when you saw her, when you saw the broadcast?
I'll tell you, it was still one of the best program I have ever seen her in. It was on the 300-year anniversary concert from St. Petersburg.
Wow.
And it was magnificent.
Anna Netrebko, do you remember that performance that George is referring to?
I think it was the Glier concert, yeah.
Yeah. Well, George, thanks for the call. You raise a question that I wanted to put to Anna, and that is, he's talking about you performing in St. Petersburg. How is it different performing over here versus when you were singing in Russia? I mean, what is different about the way the audience responds, the way you feel on the stage?
Well, I guess here the audience is really hot. It can be really hot. They can scream, and it's very nice. I love it. In Russia, they're more cool.
Uh-huh.
I will say that. They're always polite, but they almost never really like screaming, let's say that.
Interesting. George, thanks for the call. We're going to hear a little more music because we want this show to be about the music as much as anything else. So, Anna, we wanted to play an aria of you singing Violetto from Verdi's La Traviata. And this is called Estrano, Estrano. You want to talk about this just a little bit before we play it? Why don't you set it up for us?
Well, she's first time feeling what she's falling in love, and she not supposed to. And she trying to escape from that. But it's not possible.
But it's not possible. Okay, here's Anna Netrebko singing, as Violetta singing Estrano, Estrano from Verdi's La Traviata. Netrebko as Violetta singing Estrano, Estrano from Verdi's La Traviata. The words to that, by the way, was this the man my heart alone in the crowd delighted many times to paint in vague, mysterious colors. So beautiful, Anna.
Thank you.
So lovely. Can I ask how you practice, how you, your schedule, I mean, how busy you are, how disciplined you are, what a typical day for you is when you're in the midst of an opera? I mean, do you practice
very
all the time?
Very disciplined. Yeah, of course, I have to stay in the very good shape, especially right now.
Yeah.
When I have so many important performances. Mm. And I'm practicing. When I'm rehearsing, it's usually 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours in afternoon. So, a lot.
Wow.
And if I don't have any rehearsal, I'm putting just the singing coaching, like for 1 hour.
Justin Davidson, I want to ask you about the kind of discipline and the kind of pressure that a young opera singer like Anna faces. You know, what does that do? How challenging is that for someone of her talent and her relative youth?
It's a huge amount of pressure, and I only hope that she is surrounded by people whom she can trust and who are not going to be taking advantage of her. It's very difficult when you're as much in demand as she is and other young singers, and when there are so many opera companies around the world making demands on her time, and also making unrealistic claims. They want her to sing this, they want her to sing that, and it really has to be her decision in conjunction with the people who advise her which roles are appropriate. It's very sexy for an opera company to say, you know, we want you to do your first Norma or or this or that, that and those may be completely inappropriate suggestions, and it takes an immense amount of discipline to turn those down. The other side of that is that as stars get more and more famous, there are fewer and fewer people to tell them what they're doing wrong. And the danger with that, I think, is that you start to get this kind of star syndrome where the personality imposes itself on the music to such an extent that it's the soprano singing this character or that character, but never really getting into the character. You just are always presented with the star, and all of the roles are simply vehicles for that person as opposed to a real dramatic experience. Mm. And I've seen that happen with a lot of people, and it's something that, you know, I'm sure she will be vigilant about, but she certainly needs to be.
Mm. Anna, do you feel like you've got the support around you to be vigilant
about
this?
I have a nice people around me who will tell me what I'm doing wrong.
Mm. But do those warnings from Justin Davidson, do they sound like good ideas?
No, he's absolutely right. Yeah. I absolutely agree with everything he's saying.
Yeah. Let's take a couple more calls. Zev is calling from New York City. Hi, Zev.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well.
Wonderful. I'm 27 years old, and I've been going to the opera regularly for about 5 years now. Hmm. I was desperate about 2 months ago to get tickets to a sold-out performance of Rigoletto to hear Rolando Villazone. I had never heard of Anna before. I went that night, and I left feeling guilty that I hardly paid attention to the character I went to hear because she just took my breath away. The problem is I had two tickets, and I couldn't find anybody to take the second. And that's not the first time that's happened, and I hope that's not because of my personality. I have a very difficult time getting my friends in their 20s or early 30s to go to the opera. And when I ask them, have you ever heard opera before? They say, no, I just don't like it. And there was a comment earlier about language being a barrier, but I think if we can get past that, the themes of love and revenge and hate and romance and forgiveness are so universal that somebody my age can connect to the characters in Don Giovanni or La Nozze di Figaro. So there is a connectedness by the universal themes. We just need to get younger people to understand that.
Zev, what did it for you? I mean, you describe it beautifully, but what did it for you? What made the connection for you at 20? You said 5 years ago when you were 22.
I was studying in Prague, and I decided to go to La Boheme. I had heard highlight CDs earlier, and I figured I want to hear an entire performance. So I read the libretto, so I actually understood when Udolpho and Mimi were searching for that key. I felt the romance, and when those musical phrases were replayed at the end when she dies, my heart just shattered into about 1,000 pieces, and it was the most terrible and most exalting feeling I'd ever experienced. And that did it for me. I've been going. It's actually pretty much the only entertainment I allow myself in Manhattan. So,
Zev, it's great. It's great hearing from you, and you raised great points. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
That was very, very nice.
Now, Anna, what do you think about that? I mean, your ideas about how to make this connection with younger audiences. What do you hear when you hear Zev calling?
I don't know. It happens with me the same. Like this young guy just told us. I went to the opera, and once I feel like my heart is breaking, and it's like the feeling was so strong, and I wanted to experience this once again. That's why I came back to listen to other performances.
Mm. Justin, let me ask you, because I had a thought. I was thinking about this. This morning, I spent a big chunk of my life growing up in Italy, where there's obviously a huge appreciation and love for opera. And one of the things that I experienced over there with opera is, especially in the summer months, there are these outdoor performances all over the place, and they're very informal, and it almost has the feel of a sporting event in a country like Italy. I mean, I'm overstating it, but there's some sort of popular culture aspect to it over there that we don't have in the United States.
Yeah, I agree with you. I spent a good chunk of my life in Italy, too, and I know exactly what you're talking about. And I think it's something that the Met and other companies can cultivate. The Met does do outdoor performances in Central Park, and, it does happen. But it's, I think, setting up a big screen, for instance, outside of Lincoln Center would be something that would bring a lot of people. Peter Gelb, the incoming general manager of the Met, has floated an idea to broadcast operas live from the Met to movie theaters around the country, and the details of that are being worked out, and I hope it does work. And that's something that could potentially be very interesting and give it a little bit of that populist feel. I mean, you could walk into a movie theater and on a huge screen see Anna Netrebko and Rolando Villazón and Rigoletto and sit there eating popcorn.
Not a bad idea. Do you like that idea, Anna?
This is a great idea. Not about the popcorn, but yeah. And we had this experience in Austria, and it was a huge success. Mm.
What success. In particular? You mean outdoor performances?
Yeah, it was a Traviata, and they put the big screens all over the places, and it was full of people, and everybody could see that, and everybody loved that.
Mm. We're almost out of time. This has been just a thrill, Anna Netrebko. Let me ask you finally, though, what's next for you? What do you want to do next? You're at sort of a career pinnacle, but you're only 34. What do you look forward to the most now?
I'm performing Romeo and Juliet with Rolando Villazón in Vienna next month, and I'm going with the Met to sing Don Anna in Japan.
And yeah. So we'll look forward to that. Thank you for coming in and talking to us. We're so grateful.
Thank you.
That's Anna Netrebko, soprano Anna Netrebko. She's currently performing the role of Norina in Donizetti's Don Pasquale at the Metropolitan Opera House, where she's on contract for two operas a year through 2010. Her CDs include Violetta and Sempre Libera. Her MTV-style DVD is Anna Netrebko, The Woman and the Voice. Thank you again, Anna. And thank you, Justin Davidson. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Justin Davidson, classical music critic for Newsday. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.